All right, welcome to the DevOps Dimension Show, and today we are going to be talking about mobile DevOps, and I'm joined by two very special guests. So could you let everybody know a little about who you are and what you do?
Hi, my name is Rayan Jaber. I'm a developer engineer on the OneDrive mobile apps team. OneDrive gives you access to all your files anywhere and from any device. In particular, I'm helping now with the iOS efforts around the iOS mobile app.
I'm Radek Dabrowski. I'm an engineer on the Next lock screen application. Next is a Android lock screen focused on productivity. So it lets you get all your notifications and launch your applications based on your location context.
Cool. So there are a lot of different mobile DevOps practices that can be enabled. And I think traditionally, a lot of folks don't really think about mobile apps and DevOps, although I think that's changing. We did a session at the Mobile Delivery Days focused on some stories there around instrumentation and mobility. But I'd love to just kind of walk through, maybe starting with developer checking in and some of the DevOps practices there, checking in their code, continuous integration more specifically. Like, what are some experiences and learnings you might want to share with everybody around continuous integration, maybe gone bad or helping out in a certain way?
Yeah, I mean, I think like to start with pre-continuous integration, I think there's is a good place to start there. So very often in mobile applications, because of how small they tend to be initially, at least, very often people just go in and write a bunch of UI code and merge their logic with the UI and push it out there. It's working on their phone, might be working on the phone of the neighbor. Great, goes to store. And then you end up with a crashing trend of like 1,000 crashes per minute. And you have a problem, you know?
That's no good. That's no good.
Definitely not good. And very often there's like also even problems with two people working on the application. You know, you add one or two developers on the app and they start working on views, they have merging conflicts, they kind of override one another. Kind of looks okay, but as soon as you start using the application, you know, buttons are disabled that should have been enabled. Logic is not quite working as expected. So if you don't have any structure in place, it can get really nasty really quickly.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, you mentioned, there's just two developers. Like, it's like, even if your startup that has two people that are writing code, you now pretty much need continuous integration.
And that's
right?
Very different from server-side environments, where with two people, you can own very large chunks of your server infrastructure, and you probably will not be, you know, hitting on it, you know, on each other's code very quickly and disrupting each other's code. But, you know, again, surface area of a mobile application is pretty small, so it's more likely to happen with less people.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
Yeah, when I joined Microsoft a few years back, I noticed we weren't doing continuous integration. Well, we were doing integrations. The problem that they were not continuous. So we had many branches lying out there, and people and different engineers working on different components of the product. But then we had milestones, and every milestone was around 3 to 4 months. And we only integrated from one branch to the other every 4 months, which meant that it was a lot of changes that are being cascading through. And then integrating them through from one branch to the other was a nightmare. It actually required, like, we had almost full-time engineer that's just doing the integrations, resolving conflicts, and it was something nobody on the team wanted to do.
Yeah, so I'm the integration dude. Woo!
What did you do in the last few weeks? Oh, I integrated stuff. So yeah, and now in OneDrive Mobile, we have CIs. We have very few branches. We only have two branches. We have the master branch, which is every developer is working on day to day, and we have the ship branch, which we ship to the app store from the ship branch. And the two branches get in sync every other week, because that's the cadence that we ship. And every change we check and ship gets automatically integrated to master. So we automated integration completely, and now we don't have any engineer whose job is to integrate things and sync branches. And everything just works, which also allows us to ship features faster to our customers, because we don't have to spend a lot of time integrating the separate components together.
Was that I imagine, you know, going from 3 months of separate branches checking into checking every day into trunk, which is really the true, you know, CI, the whole branch is releasable kind of thing. That was a bit of a transition. What was that like for teams? And how was that
It was, yeah. So initially when we started doing CIs, I mean, things will break and we had to kind of go through some pains of like discipline about doing some primary testing before checking in, because now I know that what I check in is automatically going to light up in everybody's dev box. It's not this private branch that it's okay to break things there. Nobody's looking at it. Yeah. No, I got to make sure that what I'm working on works and I test stuff before checking in and shipping it to the whole team, basically.
Yeah.
So it did. We had to go through. It was a culture. Part of it was also a lot of it was tooling to allow the everything to be automated. But there's also a cultural aspect of it and team discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things that we found worked in terms of how to approach CI as well, on top of sort of automating testing and making sure that everything runs as soon as you check in, is to decorrelate releases from the features that we're going in. So very often in the past, what was driving a release was the list of features that were going in. And mm-hmm. so obviously, you know, stuff written in the beginning was slightly higher quality than stuff written towards the end of the release. Mm-hmm. So by decorrelating and putting sort of quality gates on every single features that are built also in separate branches, so every feature has its own branch, so it's not sort of polluting the stable scope. We are sort of able to decide on the release day, is this going in, is this not going in, and only features that are stable and properly tested are being merged into the release, and everything that didn't make it will be make mm-hmm. the next release. So
what kind of tests were those with your quality gate?
Well, there's obviously there is the everything around sort of the base stability of the product. So we have a bunch of flows for the application that are being tested that are sort of the base flow, so you want to make sure that those are never broken. And this is highly automated in this case. And then there is...
So those flows are like functional, kind of like click-based,
flows.
You know, tests through the
exactly.
UX? Okay.
Yeah, this type of flows. Especially being a very heavy UI-focused application.
Right, yeah, makes
sense.
Nobody will
have the choice. Yeah. And then... obviously, the new feature is also testing the functionality of the new feature. And then we usually have a test team that is also doing manual testing against the entire product, just working through the list of tests that have not been automated by making sure that by the time that you know we're ready to release, every branch that had a new feature has been tested through the list of tests so that you know when we go out, we have mm-hmm. a high confidence in it. Mm-hmm. And obviously tracking also things and separately as such crash rates and seeing crashes. If we see any crashes on any test device, we usually that means there's a red flag and we want to go and investigate. Because one crash on a test device in a controlled environment might mean
a lot more. Yes. Yeah. There's a saying that I heard, which was, if you smell smoke or see smoke in an early environment, likely there's a fire going on down below there somewhere. Right?
Pretty nice.
Yeah. So how about on the OneDrive team? What in the testing space, right? I mean, so great that you know on the really loose side of continuous integration, right? It's you resolve those integration conflicts. But there's, you know, obviously the testing side of that as well. I mean,
So we classify our tests in different categories. We have the unit tests, which test individual components. And this is the very lowest level of test. Every time I'm writing new components, I'd write unit tests for it, whether it's parsing network response from a server or database upgrade or storing things in the database or those would be in the unit test, and we try to get high coverage there. But we also have other sets of tests. For example, we have the UI automation test, which goes through and simulates an end user installing the app and clicking through, signing in, signing out, creating folders. We try to limit it to the basic functionality, things that the app, if any of those tests is broken, then the app is absolutely cannot ship in that state. So by keeping those tests small, but keeping a lot of eyes on them, and if they break, we try to fix them as soon as we can. That's how we try to keep the ship branch shippable at all times.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so is there any kind of best practices that you would recommend in terms of kind of the scaling of the tests themselves, right? I mean, it sounds like there's a common denominator there of we need some kind of core functional UX-based tests to make sure those scenarios work, because those are just key, and maybe some unit tests perhaps. But beyond that, how do you, you know, any tips in that space, or yeah, how do you pull in one or the other?
Yeah, I think there's in terms of tips on approaching testing, like very often, especially if you're a small company, you know, just again, the example of two people just started building something together and kind of looks okay. You then realize that maybe you want to start adding some tests. Very often there is a fear that appears in a lot of people of saying, well, now I have this code base that has been written like how it has been written. You know?
There's no bugs in it.
Now I need to go and write tests. And like it's going to take me weeks, right? I don't want to do that. I don't want to write tests for something that is somewhat working. You know? And I usually... When teams face that issue, what I recommend is start establishing a test bar for your new features. Mm-hmm. And so all the new features that go into the product go along with the test. Mm-hmm. So that you, like, as you know, you mentioned, like, you have at least a unit test bar, right? Which usually I like it pretty high because, you know, 80% seems fairly reasonable, for example, in this case. And then you might have some UI tests which are expensive to write. So if you are sure about your feature, great. If you are kind of, will that feature even make it? Maybe you don't have those, but you focus more on the unit tests in this case. But as you add new features, you start growing your code base. And then obviously, you know, as you start also writing new features, you will touch the old code base and start refactoring it. And this is the time to start writing unit tests. So over time, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months in, you will start having a really good code coverage, and without actually having the pain of saying, "I'm going from 0 to 100. Like, how do I do that?" Mm. Well, don't. You know, like, do it step by step, but just be very disciplined about starting writing your tests for all the new stuff and sort of getting used to it. And after that, it just becomes a second nature. Then you don't want to push anything out without having tests.
Okay.
Yeah, one thing we also realize in mobile, just like in the other space really when it comes to testing, you want to keep your tests fast and reliable. Because if your tests are not reliable, then they're not going to give us the value. They're going to break, and our engineers, from the mobile delivery days, it seems like it's a common practice among many engineering teams. They always blame the testing.
It's the test
testing infrastructure,
it's
right?
We don't have bad code. It's only the test.
It's either the cloud not the cloud, it's the test. If it's not the test, it's the test infrastructure. And it's the very last thing that people like admit that it's actually a bug in the code.
Yeah.
But without reliable tests, we can't make that jump to conclusion. So.
Yeah, that makes sense, totally. What about moving beyond kind of the automated unit kind of functional test side of things, how do you get more feedback in terms of data and, you know, scaling that feedback with your application?
Yeah, there's two sort of aspects to that. There's sort of the qualitative feedback, which is what users will be saying about the product. And there is the quantitative feedback, which is based on metrics. And you want both, and you want to be able to track both. I have a pretty good story on the first part, on the qualitative feedback, as we ship Next. So I was watching it going to store around 6 a.m. in the morning. I was actually the first one to download the first copy of it. I was like, great, works. Made myself a coffee, came back to the computer. I had one email from a user with a feedback, a pretty sizable feedback, actually. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Okay, you know, fine.
Because you had email feedback in the...
Yeah, email feedback. Okay. We had emails. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I packed my computer, went to work. A couple hours later, opened my computer. I had 200 emails with feedback. I was like, what just happened, you know?
Yeah.
By the end of the day, we had over 2,000 with like one piece of feedback coming in every single minute. So I had to hire people from other teams, asking them for help to reply, because we really were sort of wanted to reply to every user, and also categorizing it to understand what were people even, you know, asking for, like how often they were sharing the feedback. And so pretty much by day one, we knew there's no way email will be a way to scale feedback. So we started researching a few platforms. We found User Voice, which actually is really great, works really great for us for a few reasons. One is that we can answer every email, but we have it's more automated, so it's sort of like easier to do it. But it also, instead of having emails coming in, people can go directly to the website or actually in the SDK in the application and vote on ideas and search for, you know, if someone submitted an idea already, give their vote instead of having to type like the text. It lets us also interact back to the user, telling them, yes, that idea has been sort of vetted up, we'll deliver it, or we just did it, you can try the product again. And so it's been really great because we received good feedback on the how we process the feedback from both users being happy that they actually have a real person replying to them. Mm-hmm. And we had cases where people were super unhappy with some feedback and then went back to the store once we addressed it, put us a good review, send another piece of feedback saying thanks for doing it. So it was really for sort of, I would definitely recommend having something like User Voice as a platform for managing quality feedback at least.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we use User Voice in OneDrive too, and it's been working great for suggestions, and because then users can upvote and things, and then we can look at the top voted features and make sure we address them in future releases. In earlier versions of our app, we did not have in-app feedback, so users were not able to give us directly from the app, tell us something is broken. So our users are smarter than that. They figured out other ways to send us the feedback. They would go just give us a one-star review and say, this is broken or I can't do something.
One way to do it, yeah.
And that was very frustrating for us as engineers because not only was it hurting our reviews, but also it was not actionable. A review that says this app is not working or crashes, we can't really act on that. So we added the ability to make it easy for users within the app. You just shake your phone and then it prompts you for, do you want to send a feedback? And then the user describes what the issue they're encountering. We automatically attach a screenshot, logs. The user can opt out of the attaching a screenshot, but they have the ability to send these things to us. And then the engineer on the receiving end, they would receive the feedback, but now it's actionable. We can look at the logs, we can see what's going on, and we can actually do something about it and fix it. And as you mentioned, we've seen our users be very happy when we respond to them and fix issues. And we've turned many like potential one-star reviews into five-star reviews this way. Because they're like, oh, that wasn't working. And they got back to me and fixed it with a week. That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool.
It's pretty amazing to see how sort of dynamic users are in terms of both providing feedback and also doing that whole sort of coming back to something that they said before because it changed. Like I was definitely not expecting that when we initially shipped. Like I was expecting maybe one or two pieces of feedback per day.
Yeah, people are passionate about the tech, which is good to get that side of things. So what about that's like getting the feedback from the app, but we've kind of got we get the automated testing in a CI. Mm-hmm. Kind of sense of the word, and that's like virtual, and we've got the feedback from the users, but what's maybe another good step of testing that your teams use past the just pure automation side of the house?
We actually, with Next, pretty quickly, we realized that we don't want to, when new features are potentially disruptive to how people use the application, we didn't want to ship straight to the store and then realize a day later that we made a big mistake. Mm-hmm. Never a good idea. Mm-hmm. Because both people love it, but they're also users are tend to be unforgiving very often. So you don't want to trigger that unforgiving piece of them. So we use the Google Store. The Google Store has the ability to create channels, like alpha channel and beta channel. So we use both. We have internal users inside Microsoft on the team and outside of the team who are on the alpha channel. So they get pretty much bits every day as the developers are building the application. And then we have a beta channel to which we ship every few days a stable release. But what's coming into the next release cycle, like our release cycle is 3 weeks, so it's pretty quick. But we want to have intermediary sort of ways of measuring the feedback there. And what is great with the beta channel, it's a community page, essentially. And so we have a direct feedback with users. So even sort of deeper than what User Voice provides us, where it's more aggregates, here it's people posting screenshots of their application, complaining about something that we broke that they didn't like, or on the other side being happy about something that we just introduced. And there is what we enabled is having our engineers going directly there and discussing with the users about new features. So in the past, they would have had a proxy doing that, right? So maybe a customer support or like a product manager going talking with users, you know, coalescing all that feedback and saying this is the next thing we do. Now we have engineers working on a specific feature, going straight to the community, getting feedback, interacting with the users, understanding was that good, was that not good, what did you like, what did you not like, and sort of adjusting the features, shipping new bits as they go. So by the time we go into the store, we have a fairly good understanding about the sort of chances of success of the feature.
And did you combine that with additional like kind of instrumentation?
Yes.
What was that like? So I mean, obviously you get the direct feedback from the channels, but what else there?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in the beginning, like we have this both the qualitative and quantitative feedback, and for the quantitative feedback, we use Azure AMI.
Okay.
And so we use it at all phases, so both sort of in the alpha beta as well as in the store. The metrics that we are using are of various types. So in the store, typically what we'll be looking is metrics such as retention, for example, for a new version. Like, is the new version improving the retention of our users over time compared to previous versions, right? Which is a good thing. The contrary is not a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Is our user base as a result going up? And we actually had great, quick fixes that we had to ship because a year ago, roughly, we had a release going out and suddenly our daily active users going down like really badly. But testing was fine, and beta users didn't see anything, so we didn't know what was going on until we realized that upgrade users were having an issue. Mm-hmm. But like just looking at the metric, even without anyone reporting it, we guessed what was going on. So like within a few hours, we delivered a bit and caught up on our user base. But it was one of those where very happy to have real-time
like
metrics.
Thankful to have the metrics going there, yeah.
Having to wait. I mean, some platforms like on Google Store, you have to wait 48 hours for metrics to propagate. Having them real time and like knowing something is not going right in the right direction is pretty good. In sort of beta and alpha, what we tend to track more is if we ship a new feature, every new feature has a list of events that are instrumented along with the feature. So we tend to track if people use it the way we thought they would use it, or a different way. And this is why I'm saying like it's very important to sort of merge the two, like both the qualitative and quantitative. Because often users might be saying one thing, or it's just a vocal subset of the users might be saying one thing, but then like when you look at the real data from usage, it might be another picture. So you have to sort of look at both and say, okay, well, maybe those two people are very unhappy with this feature, but like it turns out it's actually working well, or vice versa,
Yeah.
And so we track very like on daily basis all the metrics.
So we're going to jump, let you. I know you've got a lot to share in this space, too. So just to attach to his story, does the OneDrive team have scenarios where you've noticed that maybe a vocal people on a certain feature or functionality was like, hey, we thought this was amazing, and then you saw something a little different?
Yeah, we had actually one of the most top requested features for us was the offline support. Users wanted to take their files offline wherever they go. They don't have the internet. They want to be able to read their document, browse their photos, play their video. So we spent a project around it to support offline for OneDrive, and we had a lot of features planned for scenarios to support in the offline for those scenarios. But then we took a startup approach where we just identified what are the key things for an MVP product to be out there with offline. And we shipped it, and we had a lot of telemetry to understand how are users interacting with this feature. What kind of files are they taking offline? When they actually look at files that are offline, are they connected to the internet, or are they actually really not connected to the internet? So, and then we found out, and we had a lot of insights from that telemetry. One of the things we found out was that most of the time when users were actually accessing those files that they marked offline, they were actually connected to the internet. So they were using our offline tab more like a favorite list, more so than an offline scenario. And then that allowed us to adapt quickly and for future. So instead of focusing on building more and more things, for example, around offline, maybe favorites is the next thing we should try, for example, to address if that's the usage access pattern from our customers.
That makes sense. So I want to help fill the gap in the story that Radhika had here on how do you scale kind of your feedback channels. Let's just say early on, you've got the automated testing. what happens typically after that on the OneDrive team?
Yeah, so we make heavy use of feature flags. So sometimes the same bits, whether there's in your app or my app or my, you know, my teammate's app, sometimes experiences are different because as we ship features, before they mature and the feature is ready to light it up for everybody, we start lighting up gradually. So we start with the feature team that's working on that feature, making sure it's polished, making sure that all the other features that it interacts with are working. And then after that, we broaden it up to the team. And now, and we have a daily build every day where we kick off, it happens automatically in the lab, where we kick off a build with the latest bits from master to dog food. And then everybody in the company, internal in the company, receives that build. And actually, if they just use the OneDrive app, it prompts them that, hey, there's a new build. Do you wanna update? Mm-hmm. And if they update, then we get always the latest feedback. So many times we get things from internal engineers and kind of like, oh, you know, this is not, I find this confusing, or I find this terminology here confusing. And then that is an opportunity for us to take that feedback and fix it before we roll it out to everybody in the public. And sometimes there are certain issues that are controversial. Sometimes it's easy, we all can agree. I'm like, yeah, having this wording maybe is the best thing to do. But sometimes we disagree. Like, you know, you think that doing this is better, but I think differently. And I've been in many debates where these things can go endless, right? Because a lot of it is opinion. Mm-hmm. And then now we resolve it in our team by just like, you know what? We'll just do two versions of that. Some users will get your wording, and some users will get my wording. And we'll make an experiment.
We'll have a little competition. Friendly competition backed by user data. That's the way to go. The way to throw down, right?
Exactly.
A little experimentation in the mix. There you go.
And then we'll get data, and then we make a decision based on that. And sometimes the results are really surprising there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's fun bets going on and things that who wins the competition gets to do certain things there. What about, so you mentioned direct deployment. Uh-huh. What is that like? What does that look like, and how has that changed things?
So our builds are hosted in VSTS, and we use Hockey App to publish a build to dog food. So we have an automated definition, a build job that goes through the step, builds the unit tests, make sure that, you know, nothing is broken, and then on success, then it automatically publishes a new build using Hockey App and everybody within the today we limit it to the customers in the company, but they are able to download that build. They don't even need to be on CorpNet. We made it so easy. We tried to remove all the friction barriers so that it's so streamlined. Users are able to always update to the latest dog food.
And how did doing that, what did that start to change? You mentioned like people started to have mention about features or things there internally. Like what? How did things, how are they different?
We started getting early feedback just about you more there's the crashes, right? I mean, that's obviously the first thing we look at, right? Mm-hmm. If there's certain engineers report, you know, I'm not able to upgrade, or there's an upgrade issue, or it's crashing, then that's the first thing we look at. And there's also the qualitative, you know, I'm confused of how to get to this, or I used to be able to do this and now I don't know how to do it. So we know that there's a discoverability issue or a usability issue, and we try to address it before we ship.
So you had kind of like devs and other internal employees using the features before it kind of goes out to other people, and then providing that qualitative feedback to each other more, so you get a bigger volume on what's going on in your early in your development cycle.
Yeah, and a lot of people in our team were very interested in always seeing the latest bits, including our like management chain and other team colleagues across the company. And that allowed us to basically get our code faster to them so they don't have to wait for even 2 weeks, right? Today we ship to the App Store every 2 weeks. So they can actually get to see things even faster than that on a daily basis.
So you maybe have like a VP or other people getting here like that feedback that day from that build going right to the engineer, and you're like, all right, that's an interesting scenario, right? How about on your side? Have you seen things change with that kind of early feedback?
Definitely.
Kind of cycle?
Yeah. I mean, both in the like very early feedback, actually, what Ryan said resonated, because we also had a lot of discussions in the very early days about is this the right way of doing it? Is this not the right way of doing it? And so sort of adopting sort of the lean approach, we said, well, we could build each of those and spend some time testing each. But we also could try to find a cheap way of doing it. And so leveraging that beta community that we mentioned, we're running surveys, sort of visual surveys. So we have high fidelity mockups or even sometimes interactive mockups that we put in front of users and let them ask them, you know, which one you prefer. And we both look at their vote and also like the quality feedback that they provide on those designs. And so very often, like, we had surprising results because like the team was sort of leaning one way, and then back results from the community come back and it's like an 80-20. The different way from what we were thinking, yeah. You know? And it's great because it changes our entire thinking about like how to build it and also what people want to do with it. Like sometimes we had the wrong assumption about, you know, even why we were building the feature or why people were asking for the feature. And so running those very early sort of tests was very useful into understanding why in the first place they were asking for the feature and so refining it. Mm. But yeah, on like based on sort of feedback and interaction with the community, I would say we change every feature before it goes out to the large public a few times internally and sort of revving it with the beta community before mm-hmm. it's published. And so it's tremendous as a helper. Like I would recommend anyone building an app doing that from the get-go.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, so do you have any kind of final just general points of learnings or feedbacks you want to give to the audience and or calls to action as we close out here?
Understanding the customers, like if I want to wrap up the most important thing that we do in order to deliver the best experience is really understanding our customers through telemetry, through the whether there's crashes or whether they're A/B tests or feedback. Like that really was critical, and because we can all go and pile on features and features and features, but if they're not working to our customers' expectations or they're not using them in the way we built them to be used, then if they're not really successful, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, so. It's a technical debt. If nobody's using it or it's causing a negative experience, like cut it out, right? Yeah, makes sense. And what about maybe a call to action on your side where maybe people can go to learn more or...
Yeah, so my latest blog post on finallyblog.wordpress.com addresses best practices in mobile delivery and continuous integrations. It covers a lot of the topics that we talked about in this interview. Finallyblog.wordpress.com.
Cool. Right on.
I mean, like, what Brian said is perfect. I think, like, I would encourage every person, every team working on a mobile application to think about sort of their channels to the customers early on, and also about analytics, you know, dropping things like SDK, like the Azure ME, for example, in their app and getting those metrics early and being able to tweak them over time is a good thing. And then being to what you said, like being extremely open about building the product. Like there's what you think is the product to build, and there is what usage and customers will tell you is the product to build, and the latter will make you give you, you know, fame and riches. The former, not so much.
Okay. All right. Thank you guys so much for your time. Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.